Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
A man born and raised in Marion County is working to free men and women who were wrongly convicted to prison. Let's go in depth with attorney Tim Agin with the Arizona Justice Project, formerly of Knoxville. Tim, can you give us a little bit of a description of how you got from Knoxville to the Arizona Justice Project?
Well, for many years, I worked as a Maricopa County public defender. Maricopa County Public Defender's Office is in Phoenix, which the Justice Project is as well. After, you know, graduating from school in Knoxville, I attended law school at the University of Iowa. And then after law school, I briefly practiced in Ottumwa for a little bit and then moved to Arizona in the late 1980s and began working as a public defender in Maricopa County.
What's the Arizona Justice Project?
It is the Arizona affiliate of the National Innocence Network. The Innocence Project was founded in New York City by Peter Neufeld and Barry Scheck, and they have spread throughout the United States. There's about 50 different Innocence organizations that are part of the network that are scattered throughout the United States, and Arizona was the fourth Innocence Project that opened up, and we've been open for 20 years.
And what you do is you work with those people that are innocent but have somehow, through a variety of circumstances, found themselves in jail?
Right. We worked to seek justice for people who were innocent and have been wrongfully imprisoned. We also do some work on cases of manifest injustice, meaning those cases in which the person may have actually committed the crime but received a sentence far in excess of what would be an appropriate sentence for the crime that they were convicted of.
Can you give me an example of that?
One of the cases that we worked on recently involved an individual who had sold a small amount of crack cocaine, $20 worth, and had received a sentence in excess of 50 years. That person actually did serve over 15 years in prison, which would have been a larger amount than normal, that even for that sort of crime, and we were able to secure his release.
Well, what circumstances result in such injustice?
Well, Arizona has relatively harsh drug laws, much harsher than the drug laws for federal drug offenses, for example. And the individual went to trial, was convicted of two separate counts, and the judge that sentenced him was a fill-in or pro tem judge, and rather than sentencing him to concurrent sentences, actually gave him an aggravated sentence and made the two sentences to be consecutive to each other, resulting in more than 50 years for, you know, selling $20 worth of rock cocaine. You know, that was one of the reasons why we worked on that particular case, is because it was, you know, way more time than what would be typical for somebody who had committed a crime such as that.
Now, is this common? Is these unfair sentences common?
We know, obviously, a sentence like that was well out of the ordinary. So something like that is not a common sort of sentence.
How about people convicted wrongly? Is that uncommon, or is that common?
Well, estimates are that the error rate in the criminal justice system is somewhere between 1 and 10%. And I guess it's difficult to know what the exact error rate is, you know, just like any other system run by human beings, the system strives for perfection but is unable to obtain perfection. And the error rate, I guess, after DNA evidence became, something that could be used back in the 90s and early 2000s, errors became much more readily apparent to people. And that's been one of the things that's driven the innocence movement, is that the DNA exonerations were able to prove with conclusive scientific proof that the wrong person had been convicted. You know, obviously, DNA evidence or other scientific proof doesn't exist in every case, so it's always difficult to know whether or not an error has occurred or not.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Attorney Tim Agin with the Arizona Justice Project, formerly of Knoxville.
What case are you working on right now? Can you share any of that? I presume you're working cases?
Right now I'm working on a case of a person who was convicted of a double homicide in Tucson. And there was allegations that he was at work. The trial lawyer did not do a particularly good job of investigating or presenting the alibi information that may have proven that he was actually, you know, 30 miles away at the time of the crime.
Okay, so how did you become aware of this?
This one was referred to us by another lawyer. At our project, like many other projects, individuals are either able to write in themselves, or family members or other lawyers are able to write to us and ask us to look into cases. We in Arizona get roughly 400 people asking for our assistance every year. Obviously, we don't have the resources to litigate 400 cases a year, and we certainly don't have 400 cases a year where there are ways in which we can prove somebody is innocent. So we don't go forward with as many cases as that.
So is it mainly just bad defense attorneys that result in these wrongful convictions?
The leading cause of wrongful convictions is faulty eyewitness identification. Eyewitnesses, are asked to make an identification of somebody they may have never seen before. They have limited opportunity to see that person. They're viewing them oftentimes under very stressful situations. And there's oftentimes, mistakes made in that second eyewitness, the eyewitness identification process. Interestingly enough, I mean, everybody knows that that's the case because we've done the same thing. People that we know, we see somebody that looks sort of like them, and we mistake that person, for the person that we know, at least momentarily. And this is oftentimes people that we know quite well and shouldn't be making mistakes.
Okay, so wrong identifications, eyewitnesses.
Yeah, eyewitnesses are the primary thing that happens, and I think most of these people are actually trying to, pick out the person that was the perpetrator. They're not trying to get it wrong.
Right, and so the police round up the usual suspects, and the people think that there's got to be somebody in the lineup that otherwise the police wouldn't bring them forward, and so they pick somebody.
Right. And, one of the cases that I know has gotten a lot of national attention is the Stephen Avery case. And he was originally convicted of a rape that he was later exonerated because of DNA testing. But the original conviction, not the murder case that was the primary focus of the documentary, but the original conviction that he had was a mistaken identification that the woman identified Stephen Avery as the person who had raped her. And it turned out later that the person who had raped her was somebody else, and that was a DNA exoneration.
And I'm guessing that this falls disproportionately, these wrongful convictions and the harsher sentences falls disproportionately on minorities.
Well, I think as a general rule, minorities are overrepresented in the criminal justice system, but it's also not necessarily always a minority issue. It's oftentimes an issue of poverty that also is a very important contributing factor. But, white people are victims oftentimes of wrongful identifications as well.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation with Attorney Tim Agin with the Arizona Justice Project, formerly of Knoxville. I was reading yesterday, you might have an opinion on this, I suspect that you do, that Attorney General Jeff Sessions has retracted an Obama-era guideline to state courts that was meant to end debtors' prisons, where you could essentially go to jail for not being able to pay a fine. Well, I was thinking the minority issue was that these kinds of things were part of the problem in Ferguson, Missouri, and in that people were fined like $300 for jaywalking, $530 for allowing weeds to grow in one's yard. And so these people that can't pay their fines end up for weeds in their yard end up going to jail. Guidelines are gone, right?
That is, obviously I think the DOJ policy was just a guideline, but the idea that courts become a funding resource for governments is a problem, I think, throughout the country. I don't know locally if courts are, you know, in Marion County, whether courts are expected to contribute to the financial coffers, but in Maricopa County, drug fines in the felony courts and DUI fines in the misdemeanor courts fund both the court system almost in its entirety and also give money to the general fund. And it's a way in which, you know, these really astronomical fines that nobody can afford to pay are a revenue source. And the criminal justice system's not really designed, you know, to raise revenue. It's supposed to be designed to punish people appropriately for what they've done.
Should people go to jail for not being able to pay for a ticket for jaywalking? Does that really happen?
I believe it happens, and also, you know, the jaywalking and, you know, another thing, and I'm sure this happens in, you know, Marion County. Individuals need a license and a car in order to get to work. But, you know, once you get in trouble and fall behind on fines, you may lose your right to have a license or a car because of your inability to pay traffic tickets, which, you know, further exacerbates the situation in that you're not able to go to work and not able to do the things that you need to do in order to be a contributing member of the community.
And so poverty is a factor through all of this, it sounds like.
You know, statistically speaking and anecdotally, it seems like poverty is usually a huge problem that faces, you know, people that are in the justice system.
What do you find rewarding, enriching in your job?
Well, the opportunity to actually help people on an individual basis, both when I worked at the Public Defender's Office and here at the Innocence Project, it's an opportunity to try to do something for another person, to try to help them out and get them out of a situation that they are in. Oftentimes, these people have had many disadvantages throughout their life and have not been able to enjoy the same things that, you know, other people have enjoyed that allowed them to get to the place where they were in life.
But what's your ultimate motivation? I mean, you could have gone into corporate law, and I presume corporate law pays a lot more than the Innocence Project. What's
your motivation?
Oh, absolutely.
I have no interest in that area of law, and I don't really find it to be very rewarding thing to do, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, money is just money, and I guess the idea of being able to help people and to try to, at the Innocence Project, fix mistakes that the justice system has made is much more rewarding to me than it would be to make more money.
When your project has found somebody, has proven their innocence, what's the response of the people, the system, the attorneys, the law enforcement, everybody that helped put these people behind jail wrongly? What's their response? Do you ever interact with them?
Yes, and it kind of, at least in our situation, we're a statewide agency. And so we deal with county attorney's offices throughout the state of Arizona and the Arizona Attorney General's office. And it really does depend on the agency that we're dealing with. The Pima County Attorney's Office, for example, has a conviction integrity unit, and we have worked very closely with that particular office to review cases and to try to resolve the cases that there may be issues of actual innocence or manifest injustice. Pinal County, which is just this county between Tucson and Phoenix, is starting a conviction integrity unit, and we're trying to begin working with them, but it's in its infancy. Maricopa County, on the other hand, is much more difficult to work with, and it is, you know, really depending on who you're dealing with as to how, you know, the various prosecution agencies are in response. The law enforcement, interestingly enough, has almost universally been very concerned to adopt the best practices and to do the things themselves to avoid, you know, wrongful convictions in the future. It seems like they've been more concerned with, trying to fix things going forward than some of the prosecution agencies have been.
So it sounds like law enforcement there and at least some of your counties are interested in justice and not covering up for past mistakes. That justice is their overall goal then.
Well, certainly, you know, going forward. I mean, obviously, each individual case there may be some resistance to the idea that a individual conviction was inappropriate, but law enforcement, we have found working with them for the ideas of trying to adopt best practices to avoid faulty identification or to avoid interrogation practices that are designed to get false confessions, they've been very anxious to work on that area.
Is there anything in particular that you would like to share about your work that I haven't asked to the folks in your hometown?
Oh, I mean, one of the things I would point out is that, you know, the idea of people being convicted, you know, happens throughout the country. There's an Innocence Project in Iowa. The Innocence Project in Iowa is a little less organized than it is here in Arizona. But there's a person at the Polk County Public Defender's Office, or the State Public Defender's Office in Des Moines, that does innocence work. There's also a group of lawyers that form the Iowa Innocence Project. And then Iowa is also covered by the Midwest Innocence Project that would also be able to look into cases. So if there is, a case that an individual, you know, thinks there was a manifest injustice, certainly there are resources right there in Iowa that you could reach out to and try to go to them for help. And one of the other things I think everybody should keep in mind is that, you know, the justice system does the best it can, but no system run by people can be perfect. And mistakes are made, and, you know, I think as a community, we should strive to do the best we can, realize that if a mistake is made, that maybe we could go back and look at cases with a critical eye towards whether or not an injustice was done or not.
Thanks to Tim Agin for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.